folks, it's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Good morning, folks. Welcome to Democratic Perspective. We got a full house today. Michael Cosentino sitting across from me and Klaus von Stutterheim.
All right.
Is that close?
Very good. That is very good.
Very close. And we have a guest, Mike, who's running against one of our most
stupid,
insane, crazy, weird. I mean, if you want a guy who has conspiracy theories, not growing out of his ears, but growing out of his
etc.
We've got Paul Gosar.
Paul Gosar. And he's and we always have to mention that he is our in Cottonwood representative, not your representative in Sedona. But everybody needs to be concerned about Paul Gosar. The fact that Paul Gosar is in government is a scary, scary proposition. We know that 6 out of 9 members of his family have wrote letters, you know, to the world during the last election cycle that he was unfit for office.
And
that,
the TV ads for his opponent. I mean, we never seen anything like that.
Yeah. So Gosar, District 4, Stu Starkey is running against trying to get through our Democratic primary. That's how it works, folks.
And we actually have a Democratic primary this year for the first time in a long time, Mike. And I don't know how long it's been.
Who else is running?
Well, Mike.
Delina DeSanto is running.
Yeah. I missed that interview with her.
Well, it was a stellar interview on both sides. The candidate and the interviewer were just
peachy.
Freaking brilliant, as usual, I think. But we want to talk about Stu Starkey this morning. And believe me, for this guy's presence and career, 44 minutes isn't going to be enough. But we're going to try.
Well, Stu, tell us a little bit about yourself. Introduce yourself to folks who are listening to the program or watching it on Facebook.
Well, thank you very much. Probably the political highlight of my life was 2004, where I was the Democratic candidate in the Senate race. I took that on when the Democrats had no
ran against John
opponent
McCain.
For John McCain. And one of the highlights of that was, as we ran around the state, we told the folks down in Tucson, help us get on the ballot, we'll bring a debate. And nobody thought we could get a debate out of John McCain. And I actually debated him 3 times. We debated in Tucson, Flagstaff, and then a media debate in Phoenix. So it was a great experience for me and an honor and a privilege to represent the party at something at that level. But for me, I'm a school principal in South Phoenix. When you look at Paul Gosar, everything that I do in my life, he is contrary to everything I believe in. So that's why I got back in this race, more than anything, to try to make sure that Mark Kelly is the next U.S. senator, so to strengthen our ticket and to represent the values of the Democrats and the good folks of CD4. I got back in this race.
So I want to ask this because I've heard you say this before. You debated John McCain.
I debated John
McCain 3 times.
In fact, you can see the one from Tucson on our website. That's StuStarkey2020.com. And it really, I think, prepares the folks in CD4 to understand what qualities I bring to this race and why I think this can be probably the most challenging race in a decade in CD4.
So not to challenge your debate skills or your presence again, was this in part due to his integrity? Because these guys don't debate.
So what really happened is he didn't want to debate me either.
Okay.
We just kept going after him in the media and in the press. Finally, somebody from USA Today in Washington said, you know, every time we see that Starkey is somewhere, he keeps saying there's an empty chair, John, that you're not in. And finally he said, okay, let's get this debate thing going. Okay. And we were able to. And I think it just, you know, references the qualities I bring to a campaign.
Well, good. I'm glad you're running. I mean, for years I was trying to recruit even a conservative Republican. I've been talking to the Republicans and see if we could get somebody to run against Gosar, no matter how far right wing, if they weren't really a nutcase like Gosar. I mean, Gosar is conspiracy theories conspirator. I mean, he is really one of the most extreme, corrupt, dishonest, crazy guys in Congress. And I'm glad you're running against him. But you got to get out of the primary first. Why should people support you rather than your opponent?
Well, primary. So yesterday I was door to door down in a precinct in Buckeye, the same, you know, the day before that. And the message that I'm going to deliver of who I am and what I stand for and the values I bring to this campaign makes me the best Democratic candidate. So I'm really focused on Paul Gosar already. I've met, you know, my opponent in the primary a few times, and she's a great lady. Her husband's a wonderful guy. But this is a campaign that needs me in this race to be able to go toe-to-toe. Like I said, I went toe-to-toe with John McCain, one of the strongest, most powerful men in the world at that time, and I could take down Paul Gosar if given the opportunity, and I'm sure the voters will see that.
What are your leading issues? What are you running on? What are the main central issues and central values? You've talked about values that you're running on.
Well, the first piece of the way values really comes into play is that I'm a school principal in South Phoenix, and my school is 88% Hispanic. And Paul Gosar says those are little terrorists coming across the border. So basic human dignity and human value is one of the inspiring moves for me to get into this race. Clearly, there is a difference between who Paul Gosar is and what he says and how I've lived my entire life. A great example of that is the things that my school does, you know, for our kids. And we just finished a field trip to the Museum of Tolerance in L.A. with an overnight, you know, camp out. And it's about teaching kids not to hate and what we need to be in a society today. And if you listen to Paul Gosar, that is an evil man who spreads hate, who backs people who spread hate. So human kindness and decency is a big inspiration for me in this race, and just the way that, you know, I look at my kids every day when I go to school and I say I'll fight for them.
To remind folks that Paul Gosar refused to listen to the Pope when he spoke before Congress because he claimed the Pope was either a socialist or a communist or something. I mean, Paul Gosar, right, Mike, is about as extreme as they get. And also, you know, I was sort of sick, so I watched a lot of the impeachment hearing, and the Republicans. They have a guy on there who's mainly just been hired to bully the witnesses who asks no questions and just yells and screams and talks really fast. And then they had the conspiracy theory people. I guess what, since we were young, what's really happened is the conspiracy theory, the really weird people that Buckley tried to keep out of the Republican Party have now wormed their way in. And these theories from the extreme weirdness of the right. I mean, these come from people who don't like somebody and they make up something they think.
Well, any shade you can throw on a valid, reasonable, intelligent argument is what the Republican Party does. They realize the media environment today with Sinclair and Fox and that they own so much of it. It gives them that echo chamber that they need. So there is no theory that's created. There is no lie. Let's call it. Forget conspiracy. It's an out and out lie. So if Paul Gosar is a stupid, stupid man, I can say that. This isn't Rachel Maddow.
I don't have to
be careful.
His also mind is filled with the weirdest conspiracy theories. We've been talking about the invasion of conspiracy theories into the American public at large, but also into the Republican Party for a long time. I accidentally turned onto our Agenda 21 show back 6-7 years ago.
Yeah.
The crazy stuff was out there even then. So,
you know, if I can just add, it's people think that Trump is an anomaly, but it's people like Gosar and the hate that gave the open door for Trump to start his campaign the way he did and for him to be able to become a front runner so quickly in the Republican Party. The real Republican Party is dead, and Gosar and his fascists and his right wing have taken it over, and it's got to be defeated.
I think we'd all agree with that. How are you going to defeat him? I guess is the question.
Well,
go ahead, Mike.
Before that, I want to, and you can tell us that, and I want to hear it. But I've heard Stu Starkey running against Paul Gosar in Congressional District 4, is our guest this morning, and on the road, on the campaign trail, I've heard you tell a really personal story. Quite frankly, I have no idea if it's appropriate. If your campaign manager was here, if you had one, he'd probably be shaking his head, or her head. But you tell a personal healthcare story. Could you do that?
Well, not in the 40 minutes that we have, but what I can do is sort of summarize it for the listeners. Cheryl and I, and that's my wife, had a issue, a health issue, in losing a child back when our Jocelyn was to be born. And what happened is that the insurance companies and the hospitals were the ones making all of the decisions about what health care was available to us. And we lost Jocelyn before she was born, and we made a decision to terminate the pregnancy earlier so that Cheryl's health wasn't at risk. It took over a year for the insurance companies to even go to pay the bill with us. And it sort of set, you know, the political path for me. I had never run for office before that. But all of a sudden, you see people like Paul Gosar out there trying to deny women the right to go to a hospital and to deny them certain care that they need. So for me, I can tell you I stand on the very front line with everybody who's faced those kind of decisions because I had to look at it through Cheryl. And one of the things that got me into this race was all of the things that Trump and owning the courts and owning the Senate, you know, has done is given states and empowered them to make the same kind of decisions at the state level. So it was a discussion with my wife about how important it was for Mark Kelly to beat Martha McSally in this race, that he has to get into this race to support that ticket. So what I can tell you, it's really about, you know, a woman's right to the health care that she chooses and that she needs. That is an overriding issue in my campaign.
I guess let's go back to how – do you have a strategy for facing up to Gosar? Gosar's probably not going to debate you. He's in one of the absolutely – at least everyone says, right, Mike, the most conservative districts in the United States. There seems to be no reaction to his most extreme activities. I was looking at a whole series of his Twitter statements. He's sort of like Trump in that he doesn't really make arguments. He just throws out stuff, fake this, you know, lying that, on and on, attacking the impeachment inquiry. He didn't show up for it, apparently. He didn't actually go to any of the closed meetings. I don't know if you folks saw that the Republicans had this big demonstration. Well, a bunch of the guys who were in the big demonstration against the closed hearings that now turned open were people who were sitting on the committee and listening to
we're supposed to attend.
Yeah, supposed to
attend. Not only allowed to attend, they were supposed to attend. So he didn't go to 15 impeachment meetings.
15 impeachment meetings, and yet his Twitter feed is a slurry of – they're just attacks, dude. They're just saying, like, he's bad. There's no – I mean, Trump has got all these conspiracy – threats in statements, but there's no even theory behind them. They're just, you know, fake news. Well, why is it fake news? How is it fake news? He doesn't care. It's just labeling. And when I looked at Gosar's Twitter feed, I saw somebody who's just labeling his enemies, just insulting his enemies. He's not making any arguments. He's not gotten any ideas. How are you going to deal with a guy who he's just labeling everything that he doesn't like is, you know, Pope is a socialist and evil guy and so forth and so on. Yeah. He goes all the way, gosh, down.
So the strategy in this campaign isn't really about debating Paul Gosar. You know, people have asked that almost, that will you be able to debate him? Will you be able to debate him? I debated John McCain, an honorable man, war hero. Paul Gosar, I don't even want to give him the time of a microphone on a stage that I'm on. So I don't care if he debates me or he doesn't debate me. I've already sent a note to his staff offering to debate him in the county seat of every county that we cover in CD4. They've ignored it. But the question isn't about Paul Gosar. The question is about the voters of CD4. For instance, Mojave and La Paz counties, okay, they have a water crisis that now is right before them. Republican estimates, even of the Board of Supervisors in Mojave County, is they have 22 years of water left. So we have to look at the issues that are impacting the voters, and then they have to understand that Paul Gosar has no value to them. Especially as a member of the minority party in the House. And he's never addressed the issues, including a very crisis that they're facing when it comes to the issues of water.
Water will get attention in Mojave County, for sure.
Mojave and La Paz County are both having tremendous issues because of their growth. And what used to be they thought 100-year supply, they now estimate it 22 years. So when we're in Mojave County and they say, well, do you have a plan? And I pull out, you know, my plan, which includes working with California to desalinization there to get them out of the Colorado River. and also bringing in new water, which we can get from what place in Wyoming and Montana to try to up the water supply that is available to Mojave County. But Yavapai County has an issue, too, and that is that Paul Gosar has led the way to reopen uranium mining in the Grand Canyon. So you have to make a decision. You can continue with Paul Gosar, and you can face the loss through your aquifers. You know, I go up to Pine Flats Campground, and right up there is an aquifer, and I get my water for my house, and I bring it back in big 5-gallon jugs.
As do many of the locals. But we're talking about the artesian well at Pine Flats just after you get down the switchbacks.
Right, exactly. And the water is some of the best in the world. And do we really want to risk losing that, you know, so that some Canadian company can make a, you know, couple $100,000 donation to Paul Gosar? So environmental issues are going to be a major issue. The real preservation of the Grand Canyon is at stake. And, you know, I go up there 2 or 3 times a year. I have my youngest daughter lives right up off of the Grand Canyon. So I can tell you, for me, it is more than just a national treasure. It is something that we look to pass on to generations forever. And yet he wants to, you know, mine it for uranium.
And uranium mines, folks, are dangerous even after they're closed.
Oh,
they're generally deep wells that go down into the ground, that there's a seam of uranium, and it's dug out. And so those things fill up with water, even when they're closed, and the water gets into the springs around the Grand Canyon. We've done a whole show about it, but that's a good issue, Stu. I'm glad you're on that one.
So, you know, we've brought that up right at the very beginning. It was one of the inspirations for getting into this, you know, race. I take school field trips every year, twice a year. We bring families up to see the Grand Canyon for the first time. So it is just something that finally, when I said, why is this man fighting to destroy, you know, one of our most treasured resources, it just creates that inspiration to finally say, you know, this is a race that, you know, can't be ignored. But, you know, the other part of it that we have to realize is, especially Mojave County, but here in Yavapai County, the gun issue is a major issue. And all the Republicans do all day long is say, he wants to take your guns away. He wants to take your guns away. So we do want the people of Yavapai County, you know, listening today to understand we want gun control reform, but we're not in this to take your gun away. You know, recently there was a fella out in Santa Clarita, California. It's on his 16th birthday. He took what was his dad's gun. His dad had recently passed away. In the height of his anguish, he took his gun just out of a drawer and took it to school and shot up 5 people before turning the gun on himself. All we're asking is that gun should have been locked up in a safe.
I noticed the terrorist attack recently in London, near London Bridge, or on London Bridge. The guy only had a knife. The terrorist wasn't able to get a gun in England. He also wasn't able to get any dynamite or explosive, so his suicide vest was a fake.
Yeah.
And so 2 people did die, but because he wasn't standing there with an automatic weapon, he was tackled by 2 or 3 people, including a guy with a gnarled spike from the front of the of this whale that kind of whale that used to be, when they found them originally, they thought they were unicorn horns. So the guy is going after him with one of these. Somebody else got after him with a fire extinguisher. So there is a good argument for limiting access to these weapons, for sure.
Well, and think if that same thing happens at London Bridge and Lake Havasu, you know, we could have 50 dead.
Yeah, exactly. Klaus, you got a question? You're back from Montana again? And
yeah, I was curious. When you go, so this is a very conservative district. Obviously, the numbers prove it. So when you go from door to door and you talk about Gosar, I assume you talk about Gosar and how crazy he is, what's the response of people?
So for the most part, you know, he doesn't have the depth of support that you see in a Trump or a McSally. What they say is, well, you know, he is our guy. So they're not as committed to him as they are to the top part of their ticket, because they also realize that it's lunacy. You know, they roll their eyes and they try to justify some of the things he said. But for the most part, they understand, you know, which is why even in his primary, it'll be interesting to see what happens if some of the Republicans are willing to move away from him. First time he is going to be challenged in a primary. So they understand that there are better choices. And a lot of times I'm able to, when I get an individual minute, walk away with an individual vote, even though they won't bend from the top of their ticket. It's just a point of proving out what I stand for and what I believe in, and that they finally have a better choice than having Paul Gosar.
What's his opponent like? Is he to the right, to the left of him? I mean, he couldn't be to the right of him, right?
It's a lady, and we don't know much about her yet. She's just released her first video saying that she's going to challenge him because she believes in the Republican Party that once existed. But we do look forward to the fact that he may have to come out and defend his own party position on the ticket.
So what as far as strategy goes, you have an incredible district. We're talking most of Western Arizona.
Yeah.
If you get a chance, folks, go to your computer and look at CD4, and you have some idea. And when the Redistricting Commission did that, wisely, they wanted to empower a rural district with a representative in Congress, and that's sort of what they did. But on the other hand, it makes campaigning, you know, the luxury of campaigning in a populated city is something that Stu Starkey doesn't have. Just once again, we're make it clear here, we're talking to Stuart Starkey, a CD4 candidate for Congress, and we're talking about strategy. How are you going to cover now? Money, and if you talk to we talk to political people all the time, and there's only one question that they have. Quite frankly, they might have a second question about, you know, does he have any murders in his past or any prostitutes that they have pictures of? What is it? What are they? What's the as long as you're not caught with a dead girl or a live boy in bed, you're okay. But you got any money, man? I mean, how are you going to do this? School principals don't make a lot of dough.
Not in Arizona. The answer is no. I don't have a lot of money. We do have the donate button on, you know, the StuStarkey2020.com, and it slowly trickles in. But we met 2 weeks ago with our friends at the Carpenters Union. And on December 12th, we'll be meeting with the AFL-CIO. Needless to say, we're hoping for an endorsement from both the NEA as well as the AEA. So we hope that money will become enough to stay on the road and get the message out. At this point, the campaign has been about petition signatures for both myself and for Mark Kelly to make sure that we're comfortably on the ballot. Once I'm comfortably on the ballot, we'll switch to fundraising in order to try to be a more viable candidate.
Talk about petition signatures. I'm sorry.
Okay. Sure.
How many signatures do you need, and when do you need them by, and how many do you have?
So in January, the state will release the final numbers that are needed, but it'll be somewhere based on past history around 1,200 signatures. My goal is 3,000 so that nobody starts a court challenge to take us off the ballot, because that's, you know, the game of politics that people do. What I can tell you is, of the ones that I've gotten so far, it's all been off of a Democratic walking list, and it's really been well culled to know that the ones we have are valid. I'm not concerned about making the ballot, but that spread from having 2,000 to 3,000 is what stops somebody from challenging you. So we do hope to hit, you know, 3,000 signatures before we turn them in. But I'm also very proud of the 100-something in the last few weeks that I've gotten in Mark's race, you know, as well, and spreading the word, you know, for his campaign as well. Because like I've always said, this is about making sure that we win the 11 electoral votes, making sure Mark Kelly is a U.S. senator, and then doing the best I can, you know, for the residents of CD4. You can either find us through our website, and we also link the state Secretary of State's website, so people can actually do it online.
Give us the address again, too.
It's azsos.gov/elections, and then they can go right online and do it for all of their local candidates as well as their state and federal candidates.
And your website is? Give you
StuStarkey2020.com.
So really, folks, I mean, this is a plug for any candidate. We're talking democratic process here, and I've been around this certainly a long time, and you see Republicans and Libertarians and Greens sign Democratic and other petitions, because all you're asking is permission to participate in the democratic process known as, you know, the United States of America. So signing a petition isn't endorsing a candidate. It's just saying, hey, you know, let's the big boys may play the game rough We don't have to. You know, sign a petition, let the candidate run, let's hear what he's got to say, and make it a real election and make it a race. And so you don't, all you need to do is believe in America, believe in democracy to sign a petition. You don't have to believe in Stu Starkey or anyone else.
In Arizona, you don't have to be a registered Democrat to sign a Democratic petition. You could be a Republican.
You can't be a Republican or Green or Libertarian. You can be an independent or a Democrat.
Right.
Yeah.
So half of what I said is completely untrue.
Half of what you said is correct.
That's
put
right.
it up positive
yeah.
spin on it.
That's
yeah.
been my score
so,
the last
so
couple
So, Stu, tell
of,
us yeah. a little bit more. You talked about a couple of issues.
Yeah.
What other issues are you running on? When you go out and talk to people, what do you talk about?
Well, needless to say, education is a big one. Part of my background in 2014, my school was given the Spotlight on Innovation Award by Superintendent Hoopenthal, a conservative Republican at the time. And just this past August, I was named STEM principal for Arizona in an award by Grand Canyon University. So when I go in to talk about schools and people tell me, oh, I have a good school, I say, tell me about your 3D labs. Tell me about your virtual reality glasses. Tell me about those things that are part of your child's education. And they're like, well, we don't have that. So even what we consider to be a good school nowadays, you know, in Arizona is not a good school in Arizona. So the quality of education and how we prepare our kids, you know, for the future is a big talking point for me. And then most families are actually already dissatisfied with the quality of education that they're getting in their school. As you know, we are always either 49th or 50th in funding. And now the federal government has attacked even the funding that they provide to us to support programs like after school. And one of Betsy DeVos' big targets right now is the free and reduced lunch program, which means thousands of kids all across Arizona and a lot of Mojave County that meet the federal guidelines for poverty will no longer get breakfast and lunch meals provided for free if that goes through. So
for folks listening to the radio, we're shaking our head. Yeah. Mike and I, when
well,
you're
I mean,
saying
I'm,
this,
so
I mean,
the people you meet that are, and, that are ghosts or die, or you know, how do they justify supporting the Republican Party that wants to take food away from kids? How can you do away with a free breakfast or free lunch program to children that need it? How is this a position?
Because most of them don't know. And that's one of the big things about, you know, getting the word out in this campaign is the average person, when you knock on their door, is unaware of what's about to happen to the free and reduced lunch program. They're about to lose their after-school tutoring programs. They really just don't know that, because if you go around through the media, it's not covered much. So having the credentials that I have 20 years now between the classroom and being a principal and talking about the quality of education is a big change in the candidates that the Democrats have put up in the past years. And I think it's going to be a big inroad for me throughout the election season.
Is that what you lead up with when you knock on a door?
I lead up with it's time to change the tone and the level of hate that we hear coming out of Washington from any side, and that we need to get a dialogue where people are willing to talk to each other again. But quickly we get to the idea about why education is so important to me and the things that got me into this race. So we talk about the quality of schools and the funding we need for our schools, and we talk about the water issue. Those are probably the two biggest ones once I get inside the door.
And when I talk about Paul Gosar, and it has nothing to do with hate, has or Betty DeVos taking food away from children. It's about fear. I'm afraid of the Republican Party. I'm afraid of Donald Trump. I'm afraid of Paul Gosar. I'm afraid of Betty DeVos as a leader of the education department of the. So you know the what you hear in my voice sounds like anger, but inside it's fear. I don't understand what has happened to the Republican Party, why they can support criminals in the form of Paul Gosar and Donald Trump. These guys are cut from the same cloth.
I think the most difficult thing we face is realizing that all of this begins before Trump ever ran for office. The conspiracy theories, the idea of taking school lunches away, free school lunches away from kid. I mean, what could be the virtue of that? Same way with after school tutoring for kids who need it. What could be more helpful than after school tutoring? And for those to be the target things, Mike, I mean, it just seems astonishing. And I think that it's good that you bring those issues up, Stu, and we talk about education. But I don't know what it is, Mike. Some of these people feel that you can just have education without any funding. You know, they think that, you know, the teachers will just make up the difference.
It's an amazing turn of events when you think about that. America was the first country that required 12 years of school, when in Europe, you know, children had to go to school for maybe 6 years. And I think it was one of the major reasons why America became economically so successful, besides the natural resources. But now the opposite is happening, that the American education, especially primary education, has really taken a nosedive, while in the rest of the world it's not only valued, but increased value is put on it. I mean, that's why all our, I mean, you know this better than I, Paul, that you know, we do very, very poorly in these international tests with other nations, and it's frightening.
You know, one of the things that Republicans try to bring up is when you're talking about the quality of primary education and even, you know, through high school, they go, but you all want to give free college tuition. And they try to move us out of the section that we're in. So let's go right back at them with that one, too. And it's really simple. It's, what did you charge for a kid to go to his 12th year, to 12th grade? The answer is none. Then why are you charging for 13th? If we can consider being, you know, not only whether it's college or a trade, but a skilled worker and the quality of our workforce, then why is it that all of a sudden at the end of 12th grade, as you mentioned, you know, where we used to, you know, rule the world, and all of a sudden now we stop, and all of a sudden now we want to load people with debt, and we want to charge ridiculous prices, you know, for a tuition credit. So when I go to junior colleges or when I go to high schools and talk to seniors, I always ask them the same thing. I said, how much did you have to pay for your 12th grade school year? And when they come back with none, and I go, so do you think going to college is worth it, or going to a lot of the, you know, schools now, the junior colleges are putting in welding classes and auto and mechanics. So do you think going to that makes you better qualified to have a job and earn more over the rest of your career? And they're like, yeah. I said, well, why are we charging you that tuition? Don't worry, you're going to make more. We're going to charge you taxes for the rest of your life. We'll come out more than even. But we have to have that debate, and we have to be willing to take the Republicans on at every point that they stand on, because they are wrong on every point that they stand on.
And any kid and any parent, by the way, who, when you talk about K-12 free education, it's not free. You're coming up with fees all the time. You're coming up with books, that extra things that you have to buy all the time. You know, I had parents grab me by the shirt and say, what is this with free education? I've got three kids in the public school system of Arizona. There's nothing for free.
You know, when I go places to speak, I always talk about how in July or August, you know, parents and grandparents, you always get the list. List you fear, and then you're off to Target or somewhere to go down the list for all the school supplies that you have. On the day I became principal was in late July, getting ready for the year, and a lot of the teachers were making their list. I said, throw them all away.
Well,
this school will never.
What is this list?
The list is you need these many pencils and a pencil box and four notebooks and all of those kind of things on the first day of school for us to educate your kid. And we took that, and you see, you go into a Target in late July and you see all these parents with these lists buying all the things into their basket and spending hundreds of dollars on supplies for their children. And at my school, I said, everybody throw your list away. We provide everything that a student needs for their education at our school.
Wow.
I can tell you.
Excellent idea.
The response back from the families in the audience are like, well, wow, and we would love that. And also, how do you do that?
Yeah, how do you do it?
Was your question. And we make sure that we use our funding correctly. And at my school, we also do a massive amount of fundraising. And we're not shy, and we get a lot of tax credits from folks, you know, who can make their $200 or $400, you know, state tax credit donation to schools. And we use all of that money to make sure that we have everything we need. But we also have one or two great corporate sponsors who know the value of education and supply us with a lot of notebooks and pencils and those kind of things. But we never require a parent to purchase anything for their kid to get the best education they can at our school.
As Stu well knows, as I well know, each paltry Arizona school budget is a series of decisions. And if you decide to use your money to cover school supplies, at least now you're going to be cutting off some other essential thing. But you can make that, a school board, a local administration can make that decision. And obviously his school did at his encouragement, as this administrative encouragement. And I think it's a great decision because of what it's, the message it sends to a community. And I've seen and I've participated in the conflict between parent and child when there's this demand for money, almost on a daily basis for different things that are, and it's, we're not talking chocolate bars here. We're talking something that's necessary for their education, or at least good for their education. A trip, an extra book, a tool of some sort, an art thing, a science thing. The science department at the last school I left had no budget because the administration decided you don't need a budget in science. So you didn't buy any little things to cut open and all the other things that teach you how the life sciences, which, I mean, so was that unnecessary? Heck no, it was very necessary.
A lot of mice got spared getting dissected at your school.
they were in formaldehyde someplace else, so yeah. No, they didn't get spared. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I can tell you, being a principal, every day you spend hours where you would rather be in classrooms, you know, and working on the quality of education in the classroom, on fiscal issues and how to raise the next dollar and what you can do next in order to keep your school running.
I really wonder, you know, what will happen with the next generation with American education that, as I said before, was once world leader and now has become a world laggard. I just wonder what's going to happen to the economy essentially uneducated and unprepared workforce.
Well, I think it's already happening. They're looking to Germany. They're looking to the Asian countries for leadership, intellectual leadership. It's already happened. Silicon Valley may be our, I don't know how, depending on how you feel about it, it's become so corporatized. Our one intellectual shining light, and it seems to be getting a little dimmer also, but those are macro questions that we're not prepared to answer. We're trying to get Stu Starkey elected.
What about rural health care, Stu? I don't think we have the crisis here they have in some parts of the country, like in Appalachia, where the hospitals are closing. There's very few doctors in huge areas of the West. How is our health care situation in rural Arizona and the areas you're representing? Because as I understand it, there's no urban areas in your entire district, right? It's small towns.
It's the biggest would be, you know, Buckeye in Maricopa County, Prescott up here, Kingman in Mojave County. So you have some. But I can tell you there are no mental health facilities in Mojave County. Now, you take a county that is of sufficient size in Kingman, which is a decent-sized city for Arizona, and you can meet moms who are in tears because their kid is in Phoenix.
Absolutely.
Because they needed mental health care. So what I can tell you is it's not even just when you go rural, but if you look at, you know, veterans who are trying to get care out in Mojave County and up north, it's a crisis here in Arizona. Don't let anybody tell you it's not.
Absolutely, and it's one I personally deal with every day, by the way, the lack of mental health care in rural Arizona, including Yavapai County.
Because that's what you're working in now, right?
Exactly. Because I'm so close to this, I don't think I can be very articulate on it. But there certainly is a crying need, a desperate need of a lot of people. And we can talk about the details on another show. In fact, we got to do a mental health show.
And even when you look at the support that kids could get in their schools, so again, it all triggers back. I mean, think what we could do in the old days when we had resource officers and psychologists in our schools, and now with the budgets the way they are in many schools throughout Arizona,
you don't have psychologists or counselors in the schools.
So we have one this year on a grant program, but we went years without it. And when you go to a lot of schools and you ask them, do you have your own? No, we share one with four schools and so on. And if if we could get to those kids earlier on and, you know, come up with a diagnosis of a lot of the, especially mental health issues, you know, in those stages that we miss because we don't fund it.
And you need somebody outside the system to talk to, in a sense, a counselor who's not part of the authority system of principals and teachers and coaches and stuff. They need an outside guy, I think, a lot of times, just someone to talk to.
Yeah. Most of the, you know, drug awareness programs and the bullying programs, you know, are all now outside agencies as opposed to the schools.
How do we get you elected? How do you get in? How do you, what can people do? We got only got a few minutes left.
Most important, be willing to talk to your neighbors and take on the Republican message. You know, be cordial in your outreach, but go to them and make them, you know, try to really defend that vote. If it is just the last couple of minutes, what I can tell you is I would rather use it at even above me on the ticket, and that is we need these 11 electoral votes, and we need Mark Kelly in the Senate. If those two things happen, then I'm going to win, because if we were able to turn the state, then I'm going to win as well. If we move the message and we move the momentum, then I'm going to win. So we all start at the top, and we make sure that people understand that what's happened to the Republican Party, you know, is not good for the future of this country, whether they have kids or they don't have kids. They're talking about cutting Social Security, and I'm finally approaching the age where it'll be considered. They're talking about cuts to Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. They're spending hundreds of billions of dollars, you know, on defense spending that we could use back in our social system. The military budget is out of control. Spread the message for exactly what's going on in this country. Talk about a national debt that's $24 trillion and $600 billion a year in interest payments. When people talk, how do you afford health care? How do you improve our schools? Well, if we took that $600 billion back and returned it back to our society, we'd be that much further ahead. So just get out and spread the message and be willing to talk about it. I know when I speak to, you know, moderate and independent Republicans, and of course to independents as well, they understand the message and they understand the situation we're in. So get out there and spread the message. And then, of course, donate a few bucks a month to StuStarkey2020.com. It's $5 a month by a few thousand people, and we can win the seat.
Are you connected to Act Blue?
Yes, I am.
All right.
The donate button is right on that.
We have one of our biggest supporters here is a big fan of Act Blue, which we all are, because it's so simple. It's easy.
We're setting up our own personal ActBlue account
for Democratic perspective.
We're working on it. Okay. We haven't gotten it true yet.
It is the best clearinghouse in that all the data is provided already to my treasurer in terms of reporting and those kind of things.
And just to let you know, Facebook takes 7%. ActBlue only takes 4% of the administrative fee.
Administrative cost.
Most of what you donate will go to the candidate or whatever you're donating for.
Right. And so we're working on that, Mike, our treasurer and I are working on it. We should have it up in a couple of weeks. We got two more minutes. I think Stu summed up pretty well what his campaign's about, Mike. He sure
did. It's an important race. I can't begin to tell you how important it is to have Stu Starkey or someone like him in the Congress of the United States from Arizona representing CD4. And yes, Klaus.
We're even pushing in that direction, right?
Well, we're supposed to be, we Democratic Perspective tries to play by the rules. We try to be a little overly supportive. We have two Democrats running for the seat.
We're not introduced.
So be it.
That's
a good thing, by the way, folks. We want to remind folks that this, if you want a better Republican Party, by the way, you need to elect Democrats this time. You'll get the Republican Party back that you want by electing Democrats this time is my latest stump speech.
I think you're right, Mike. Yeah. I think you really have to send a message. If you want the Republican Party back, you're going to have to jump and over and vote for a Democrat in order to send a message, because otherwise it's heading down.
Let me do my wrap up. We want to talk. Thank you, Democrats of Red Rocks, for keeping us in your budget and keeping Democratic perspective on you. And the Verde Valley,
thank you very much, folks.
The Verde Valley Democratic Party of Cottonwood is sitting behind us here. Are also great supporters. We want to remind you that you'll find this show on VVID.org. Verde Valley Independent Democrats.org has the podcast of this show. You can find it other places. You can listen to this show anytime you want on KZAZM.com. When go to our website, VVID.org, and press that donate button. Thanks, folks.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.